This week on The Inside Flap.
There are stories of nurses that, you know, will be attacked by their patients or by, you know, people that are coming to visit. And so there are things like not wearing your stethoscope around your neck and, you know, making sure to keep yourself between the patient and the door so that you can get out if you need to. And just things like that to protect your own safety.
They were shocked at the colors.
Oh, no.
Did not like them.
What?
At all.
No,
and had no, no problems telling Max and I this. And so, and then,
well,
but
like,
Max,
here's the thing. Yeah.
Max just gets, his smile just gets bigger and bigger.
Good.
Because he wants people to have a reaction.
Right.
The Inside Flap is available on demand and every week on iTunes, Spotify, and around the world on theinsideflap.com. What more can we do for you?
Broadcasting live from Littleton, Colorado, this is the Inside Flap Podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. My name is Dave Medicus, and welcome to this Inside Chat edition of the Inside Flap. Seated across the table from me is Laura Medicus.
Howdy.
We thank you so much for joining us. We welcome you into the fold of our podcast that we like to call
The Inside Flap.
The Inside Flap. Got a great guest for you today. We're joined by Mary Kubica, New York Times bestselling author of suspense thrillers, including The Good Girl and Local Woman Missing. Her new book that is out now is called She's Not Sorry. It's really good. The whole family read this one. And we
That's
all
unusual, yeah, right?
Unusual. It's unheard of is what it is. We all read it.
For our family.
We all loved it. And we'll have our conversation with Mary for you in just a second. But first, Laura, you you said you had a little story to share.
Yes.
Oh,
so,
okay.
Most of you know, if you're a listener of the show, I...
And if you're not... why don't you start
backlogging?
I'm
an interior designer. So today, are you going to give me applause? Thank you. The golf clap.
Yep.
So I'm working on one of my projects.
Well, I don't have a stadium cheer sound effect. So
I like
we'll
the
go
golf
with
clap.
The
I think it's appropriate
clap.
For what I do.
Yeah. I'll give you one of these too.
Yeah, boy.
So I'm working on one of my projects is an 1891 Queen Anne Victorian in Denver. And those of you living on the East Coast listening to this, that's probably not that old.
You're talking about a house, no, not a person, when you say a Queen Anne Victorian.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. So it is.
Oh, yeah. On the East Coast, they wouldn't.
On the East Coast, you're like, oh, it's kind of old. For Denver, it is really, really old.
It's rickety.
There aren't very many 1800 homes that I have had a chance to work on. I work on a lot of old homes in Denver.
Yes.
Most of them are like 1904, 1906, and then up.
Mm-hmm.
But so 1890s, that's pretty special. And this one is the architectural style is very much a Queen Anne Victorian classic. So we are the owners. It's an apartment building, so I should say that. So it had been converted to apartments a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
So perhaps in the 50s, 40s, 50s, maybe judging by what's in there right now. So it's not like the owners are taking this old, beautiful building and turning it into apartments. It's already apartments.
Right.
They're going to completely fix it up, renovate it. These guys, I've worked with them on a bunch of different old properties in Denver, and they do a beautiful job of restoring historic homes. Mm-hmm. And they do charge a pretty penny for what they do.
Well, you know, that old stuff, you got to be careful with it. It could break.
They do such a nice job, and they're very respectful of like original things, which I like. So
and their names are Chip and Dale. Is that right?
No.
No.
So I meet the two guys.
Chuck and Buck.
At the house today. I'll leave their names out of it.
Okay.
And we are going to try some paint out. So I had done a whole paint schemes, a bunch of paint schemes. My guy had said, hey, I want it bold. I want to be risky.
Mm.
I want something that it's going to divide people. I want to hate. Some people are going to hate it. Some people are going to love it.
Now, this is for the outside of the house.
Outside.
Correct,
yes. We're talking only exterior color schemes. And so I came up with just some cool ones, and I'm partial to pink, so I do have a pink one. That's the body of the home would be pink with some with
on Wednesdays our houses are pink.
Some butter yellow accents with a hot a color from Benjamin Moore called Rouge around the windows, and then I've got a beautiful like teal color for some shingles. Like, it's not quiet.
Right. No, it sounds bold.
We have a couple color schemes, and they just went to Home Depot, got the paint things, and we are just slapping it up. We each have a paintbrush, and we're each doing our part, and we're painting it in multiple areas of the home. So on the north side, which is the face of it, faces north. So it really won't ever see the sun except for like maybe June 21st.
Right.
And then an east facing side, so we could see what it looks like in the sunlight.
Okay.
And we get these colors in. And this house is at 14th and Gaylord in Denver, Dave.
Right, so not too far away from my school.
Not far away from East. And it is like a area
historic
that's heavier pedestrian. A lot of the homes there are huge old mansions that were converted. They're apartments. Mm-hmm. So we had people, slowing down, slowing their roll on the opposite side of the street to take a gander at what we were doing. Because it's a house that has been empty for a while. It actually had a fire before the property group that I'm working with bought it. Uh-huh. So I'm sure neighbors are like, what is going on with this house?
A lot of looky-loos out there.
And then we had a couple approach us on our side of the sidewalk, and they stop. And so one of the guys I work with, I'm just going to name him, his name's Max. He looks at them and
he's like,
hey, what you guys think? And I thought,
No, why would you do that?
But I also felt hopeful because I'm going to describe the two guys who stopped. It appeared to me to be a gay couple, and they both had like gauge earlobes, what I mean.
Sure, yep.
Tattoos.
Right.
Certain hairstyles that were maybe not your country club normal.
Okay.
So they looked alternative to me. And they were also early 30s.
Okay.
A little bit younger.
Kind of hip.
Not necessarily hip, as more punk rock.
Okay. And what was the colors that they were looking at on the side of the house?
Oh, they're looking at the pinks, the hot pinks, of the colors. Okay. They got them all arrayed.
Right.
And so they were shocked at the colors.
Oh, no.
Did not like them.
What?
At all.
No, and
had
no
problems telling Max and I this. And so, and then...
Well,
but
like,
Max,
what did they say?
Here's the thing.
Yeah.
Max just gets, his smile just gets bigger and bigger.
Good.
Because he wants people to have a reaction.
Right, yeah.
And they definitely had a reaction. And he's like, well, what colors would you like to see? What would you do with this? I'm profiling these two based on the way they look, right?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
They said tasteful shades of gray.
What?
For the exterior.
Tasteful shade. What is a tasteful shade of gray?
It was the strangest thing in the world
boring,
to me.
Drab.
So odd.
Wow.
And so, we chit-chat a little more. One of the guys gets really excited about the house, and he comes up, and Max shows him around a little bit. And then we wave him off. And then we all look at each other like, Tasteful shades of gray from those two? Yeah.
Huh.
So that was one of the stranger things.
Yeah, that's a strange one.
And then we were still kind of laughing about it. And then Max and the other guy were mistaken for a couple by the couple that had stopped.
No. Really?
But it was kind of funny because it's a warm day in Denver, so I could kind of see it. And Max had on shorts.
Short shorts?
No, but he had shorts on with like a fleece top, which is odd, right? But then the kicker was he had Sperry topsiders with no socks.
I mean, what do you expect? Of course, they're going to think he's a couple.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's pretty fun. I'm going to have to go by and take a look at that.
Yeah. And then check out my Instagram, free plug here from me,
sure.
Laura Medicus on Instagram. And I have a reel that I put up today showing the outside and what the guys saw.
All
so
right.
You can be the judge and, hate us all you want because that
Laura
will make
Medicus.
Max happy.
Okay, very good. All right, well, I'll tell you what made me happy. Reading this Mary Kubica book, She's Not Sorry. This is a fun, twisty, psychological thriller that will keep you guessing right up to the end. This is the story of divorced ICU nurse Megan. Now, she is divorced. She has a teenage daughter. One of her patients that she is providing care for in this ICU unit is a woman named Caitlin, who is currently in a coma resulting from a suicide attempt after she jumped off a bridge. Megan, by the way, has her own ties to suicide from her past, and she kind of slowly would start, you know, as she's taking care of her and Caitlin's family is in and out over the weeks. She starts talking to the family, and she learned a little bit more about the circumstances surrounding Caitlin's jump, and there may have been a suspicious man who was gotten a little struggle with Caitlin near the jump, and perhaps Caitlin was pushed. This is a, oh man, this is such a good thriller.
This is a really good thriller.
You cannot,
I loved
it's one,
it.
Yeah, it's one you can't put down. You're so engaged and interested in the story to find out where it goes, and then when you get to, what? Hey, you do have to roll it.
Sorry,
it's a low sound effect as it is. Let me crank it up and
the twist.
Yes, the twist.
Jack when Black. Get
Jack Black. Shout out
in
to
one of the some movie Jack I forgot Black. The name of.
That R.L. Stine.
Oh yeah,
when he, where he plays. Yeah. Thing. So when you get to the twist, man, your jaw will be agape. Let's just say that it's a really good one. As is this book, as is our conversation. So here now, talking about her book, She's Not Sorry. This is Mary Cooper.
Yeah, and then I did see your daughter on Instagram and like killer voice, beautiful voice.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. She's about to graduate and she wants to study musical theater in college. So it's been a process.
Oh, really? Oh,
yeah.
Very exciting.
Has she decided on a college?
She's still waiting to hear back from a few more. It's just such a process. You have to send pre-screen videos and audition and they take so few kids. It's
they really
so
do. It's such a hard cutthroat business.
Oh my gosh, I know. So she, right now the University of Illinois is the front runner. So there's still a couple that she's waiting to hear from that if she got into those, she might like more than the U of I, but we'll see.
That's great. Well, that's a hometown school for you guys, I think. So
it would be, yeah, it's like 2 hours from us. It would be perfect.
Perfect. Perfect. That's great. Well, as I said, we absolutely loved your book. So She's Not Sorry. Our 17-year-old daughter read it. Absolutely loved it. She and I both were like, oh my God, where are you now? The tale of elevated trains, you know, the fear of being stalked in a big city, which omnipresent throughout this book, and anonymous letters. What inspired you to write this book?
So this one, usually I'd start with like a beginning nugget, you know, something, some kind of mystery that I want to solve. And with this one, it was actually the twist, which I won't go into for obvious reasons, but it was that twist that came to me first, and that almost never happens, but it was it was more of a concept than like a fully thought out idea, but it was something that I really wanted to explore. And so then I stepped back and I sort of created the story to go with the twist. So was a totally different experience for me writing towards something instead of having that beginning point and not exactly knowing where I'm going.
Wow. Yeah. Cause the twist, I don't want to give anything away. I'd love to talk to you about it, but did not see it coming at all. And in order to get there, did you have to outline stuff, or are you kind of a seat of the pants person?
I'm totally a seat of the pants type of person. Yeah. There are many times that I write myself into a corner, you know, and I have to back up and delete, you know, chunks or chapters or whatever. And I think, you know, to myself, if only I would outline in advance that maybe I could avoid all of this. But there's something that I love about just, you know, sitting down to write and having absolutely no idea what's going to happen in my characters' lives that day that I love. There's just something really freeing about it. And, you know, I learn things about my characters. I'll just think up a line of dialogue or a bit of backstory about them and learn something about these characters that I hadn't thought of before. And I see them in a totally new light. And that's exciting to me. So no, I don't outline. Once I had that twist figured out and I kind of went back and created the story of Megan and the other characters in the book, then I just started to, you know, work towards it just one chapter at a time.
That's awesome. Yeah, this one really worked. You nailed the mother-daughter relationship, especially the teenager. Like
we're both, I assume, probably our daughters are similar ages because ours is a high school senior as well. And maybe the earlier, like 15 age period, there was some dialogue you had early on in the book that could have been lifted from our home.
Mine as well.
And I didn't know anything about you personally at that point. And I was like, oh, this person has a teenage daughter.
Oh, yeah, it was obvious.
Yeah, because it was one of those moments where she's like, so you're saying I can't go? You're a helicopter parent, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, oh, buttons pushed.
Oh, man, I was having flashbacks.
Yeah. Has your daughter read this book?
She hasn't yet. She's been so busy the last couple months, but she wants to. And I know that she's going to see herself a little bit in the character Sienna. And, you know, you're right. She's 18 right now, but it was a couple of years ago that I started writing this book. So she probably was like 16 at the time. And yeah, it's just, you know, it's so spot on. I felt like to teenage girls, which again, you know, I live with that.
Yeah. It's that age in particular. Yeah. Thank God they're past it now.
Yes. It's a funny thing that happens as they get a little bit older and, you know, they do get past that, thankfully.
I was cracking up at the one scene where Sienna, the daughter, is like zooming in on pictures just to find something wrong about herself. Our daughter, what she likes to do, and this is hilarious, she'll find pictures of us on her phone, and she thinks it's really fun to zoom in on our faces and then laugh at every wrinkle, every mole. I'm like, could you please? She gets like right in there. It's like, stop, stop.
Teenagers are so fun.
Yeah. That's one word for it. Sure, that's one word for it.
So your main character, Megan, she's an ICU nurse, and her patient is in a coma. Not giving anything away. And you have a lot of really fascinating details about the levels of consciousness that people in comas can have. And another, I'm not giving anything away. I keep feeling like I have to say this. I was really horrified, though, when you mentioned something about a locked-in state that can happen to people in comas. Did you do a lot of research about people in comas? When you read about the locked-in state, that also seems like something that you could put a whole thriller about as well.
Yeah, I did do quite a bit of research into comas and nursing and all of that. And I agree that locked-in syndrome to me is just absolutely terrifying to be completely unable to move. You know, people are convinced that you're just completely out of it. And yet you're able to hear things going on in the room around you. You know, it's like your mind is awake, but your body is not. And I mean, it's just, I can think of few things worse than to be in that situation.
Mm. Yeah, it sounds awful.
I keep seeing the 26 point. I run marathons. Are you a marathoner?
I am. Yeah.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
You did that? Have you done the Chicago Marathon?
Few times, yes.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Have you done that one?
I have not. I've done like New York, Boston, LA, Denver here. We're in Denver, but I've always wanted to do the Chicago one because it's nice and flat, right? It's a nice flat one.
That's what they say. Yeah.
Yeah. It's nice and flat. It does end on a slight uphill, but the rest of it is, they call it a Mount Roosevelt, but it's not that steep, but you know, at the end of 26.2 miles, it feels like a mountain.
Right. Well, that's like New York. There's a tiny, in Central Park, right before you finish, there's a tiny little uphill, but yeah, it's because it comes right at mile 26. It seems like, you know.
Right, exactly. I just put my name in the lottery for New York. So fingers are crossed.
Ooh, good
luck.
Have
you done that one before?
I have not. No, I put my name in the lottery last year too, but I didn't get picked. So we'll see. I know the odds are not good, but maybe.
We were living in New York when I ran it. It's an app. Yeah, you got to, Mary, you got to pull some strings. You're a best-selling author, for goodness sakes. Come on. You got to be able to say, do something there.
Yeah, a listener could give their spot up to you.
That's right. Yeah. Find an eager reader.
A reader.
Who'll give it up. Oh, listen to audiobooks, you know.
Yeah, that's true.
Now, listen. This book really freaked me out, Mary, if I'm being honest with you. And one of the things that freaked me out was this idea of, I never thought about this, when you're a nurse and your main character is a nurse in this book, that they have to have, is this true? They have to have, they're thinking about escape plans. They never put their backs to a patient. This is just
fascinating
stuff.
That was weird. That was crazy. Yeah.
Yeah, it is true, you know. And I mean, if you think about how vulnerable nurses are, you know, and they're in these rooms with people that they don't know, and you know they're trying to care for them, but you don't know these people. And I feel like the situation goes both ways, because you have these patients who are equally as vulnerable, you know, being cared for by people that they don't know. So I feel like it makes hospitals a very unsettling situation for a number of reasons. But yeah, there are stories of nurses that, you know, will be attacked by their patients or by, you know, people that are coming to visit. And so there are things like not wearing your stethoscope around your neck and, you know, making sure to keep yourself between the patient and the door so that you can get out if you need to. And just things like that to protect your own safety.
Wow. That's wild. You think of a hospital as a place you go to get care. You don't really think about the, of course, if you write dark thrillers like you do, I guess.
Yeah. And you think about it.
Yeah, that's true. The staff forgot about the stethoscope detail that they don't
that
do
those. That was a good detail you had in there. Yeah.
That's kind of awful in a way.
Did you talk to any nurses, or do you just like get on, like, what is your research process?
Yeah, so I did. I'm really fortunate that I know a number of nurses, but I did a bunch of research on my own first. And then there were some questions that you just can't find the answers for online, or you can, but I didn't feel like it was adequate enough. So I took a couple of the nurses that I knew and asked my very specific questions to them. But knowing that many of my questions, you know, verged into spoiler territory, I wanted some people to be able to read it, you know, without knowing what was coming. So I asked a couple nurse friends my questions, and then I saved the others for a read, you know, once my editor and I had gone through the revision process, and it was pretty much done. Then I had a couple other nurse friends read it in its entirety to just tell me, you know, was everything accurate? Was there anything that needed changing? And for the most part, I had gotten it right. But there were a couple things that people had caught, which was so important to me, because I feel like if you're going to have a character, you know, that's an ICU nurse and this book is set in a hospital, then you need to get that right.
You got to get it right, because too many people know that world and are, you know, intimate with it. So that's a good point.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. The reader feedback will be immense.
Oh, they'll let you know what you got wrong.
They'll let you know.
Oh, yes, they will. They do.
There's the other thing that my daughter and I in particular loved about this book. There's so much in here that relates to women, specifically how aware we tend to be about our surroundings and in ways that men are not at all. Mm-hmm. And you have Megan, your main character. She's walking alone at night in a dark street in the city, Chicago, and there's someone walking behind her. And then she realizes she can't tell if it's a man or a woman, but then she hears them whistling. And then she immediately knows it's a man. And I thought, oh my God, I've never thought about that. But that is true, Mary. Wow. Yeah. How did you think about that? I would never have thought about that.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I think you hear these stories, you know, unfortunately, just about women being alone at night and whether it's, you know, in the city, on college campuses, just wherever, and you hear about them being attacked. And, you know, I feel like over the last half dozen years or something, there's more and more, you know, information for women about just being aware, staying off your phone, always having your keys in your hand if you're walking alone. Yeah. And things like that, just ways to protect yourself. And so I feel like for women, like myself as a runner, like I would never go running at night alone, or I would never go running in the woods day or night, you know, just things like not alone, things like that I feel like as women, we just constantly have to be thinking about. So for me, you know, having that, it was atmospheric when I, you know, kind of added that there was this man out there in the city attacking women. And I didn't realize when I put it in that it was going to be as big a part of the story as it ended up being, you know. Initially it was sort of for atmosphere, just to have that feeling of fear, you know, in the book, but then it became more and more a part of the story.
It was fantastic. And it really is like anytime, like, you know, I've lived in apartments before and there is that vulnerability between you getting into your front door in the street. And there is that sense of like, is there like looking and checking? And it's something that I doubt men ever feel.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. No, I completely agree.
Yeah. Well, you talk about running and I've certainly been out on runs where I found myself in because you did something, you don't know where you're going. You're just running through neighborhoods. And I felt a little prickle of unease. You just run faster, really. It's good training, is what I'm saying.
It's a good way to get
faster. But there's just in your book, it just always this constant sense of unease and dread about it that just works works so well. And speaking of unease and dread, you touch on suicide a lot in this book, and you know, it's something that's important to me as a teacher of teenagers. And we, you know, there's a terrible teen mental health crisis that just seems to be getting worse. You also include some really scary statistics. I didn't know this. Every person who dies by suicide, there are 25 attempts. That is insane. Is that something, did you have an idea going into this book that you wanted to touch on that, or did that just come out organically as you were writing?
You know, it came out a bit organically, that it went to the extent that I did. You know, I knew when I had this patient that arrives at the ICU from a suspected suicide attempt, you know, I knew that obviously suicide was going to be a bigger part of the story. But then it did get a little bit bigger when we learned, you know, that Megan herself has, you know, has a relative that had died by suicide, and we start to kind of dive into it a little bit more. And so some of those statistics, you know, as I was doing the research, were shocking to me. They're so sad. You know, yeah. I mean, I think we all know that, you know, how prevalent suicide is in our society, and that the mental health issues, especially among teenagers, especially since like the COVID years, have just gotten so much worse. And it's really sad. And that's one thing that I really do like to do in my books, is just kind of talk about issues that are so prevalent and worrisome in our society, and just kind of make it, you know, just make sure that people are aware of them.
Yeah.
Well, and another issue you hit on, and sometimes I just want to kill myself when I get on Facebook, is the idea of social. I'm kidding. Oh, that's true. But social media. Oh, my goodness. That plays a big part in this book. And I just love your observation that you make about Facebook and Instagram, how that's not the reality. It's the unreality, as you put it, the quote, very deliberate version of people's lives that they want you to see. What an interesting way to put it. And so right. That's all it is. This is just the persona that they've created online, and that's all you're looking at, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, it's so true. I mean, you know, you only put the happy pictures. You don't put the pictures of, you know, the big arguments that came before those happy pictures. Right. And, you post the filter pictures and all of that. You know, I can't say all of it, but a good portion of the things that are getting posted, they're just not the whole picture that you're seeing. And it, again, you know, it's problematic, because I think that people compare themselves to other people that they're seeing on social media, you know, and viewing somebody else's life as picture perfect when none of that is real.
Yeah.
Yeah. I really loved your Chicago setting. I've only been to Chicago a couple times, and it just really came alive for me in this book. Like, you know, the sound of the train in that apartment in particular, it was almost like a character. It was evocative. I could picture them living there on that walk up. Have you ever lived in an apartment like that? And then also, did you spend any time walking the streets pretending you were Megan?
So I lived in the city for a couple of years right after college, and I actually had a friend who had an apartment that did back up to the L, and I remember dog sitting for him on occasion. And when I was in his con or his apartment, you know, it was basically everything that's pictured there. You couldn't hear the TV, you know, the apartment would actually rattle, and, you know, you had to stop conversations because you couldn't talk over the train and all of that. So it was very real. I love being able to pull that into the book, because it's one of those things that, you know, for me was 20 some years ago, but I still remember. Megan's walk home, I used to commute home. And so much of it was similar to my own commute back in the day. And it was one of those things where you're on the busy streets, you know, for the majority of the walk. And so you feel safe. You're surrounded by people, but then you veer off, you know, onto your own more residential street. And that's where things become quiet, you know, and kind of that fear starts to set in, you know, that half block or block walk from, you know, the corner to your own place.
Yeah.
Totally. Yeah. We lived in New York for a few years. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, totally get it.
Yeah. You got to be careful.
Safety in numbers, you know, sure. You see a nice street, you're like, I'm fine.
For sure. I do feel like between the bitter cold in this book, though, and, you know, the crime that is happening, I'm afraid that people will be afraid to go to Chicago. It's a lovely place to go.
It is. And it's a great running city. I mean, did you run along the lake there? Beautiful place to run.
Oh my gosh, I did. Such a beautiful place to run. It gets crowded, but I mean, it's beyond beautiful. And to be right there on the lakefront for miles and miles is just amazing.
Windy, though. Did it get, I mean, I hate, that's the one thing. Like, I'll run in rain, snow, whatever, but the wind. Oh, man.
Yeah, that's funny because I feel the exact same. I say that all the time. I can run in anything but wind.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's really funny.
Now, I see you're also a former, you know, I'm a teacher. You're a former high school teacher. What was that like for you? Were you were you writing your first book while you were teaching?
So I had been writing, but it was more just as a hobby. I didn't think I was ever going to do anything with it. And then when my daughter was born, I stopped teaching temporarily. And that's when I started writing my first book. So while I was home raising my family, that's when I started publishing. And so I never did go back to teaching, but I absolutely loved it. I thought for sure, you know, I would be back in the classroom. And then this writing career happened. But one of my favorite things to do now as a writer is to get into the high schools or any school and, you know, talk to the kids about writing and publishing. And I'm doing one in just a couple weeks. And I really look forward to that. It's so fun to get back into the schools.
Oh, that's great. I wish you lived closer. Yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome. Because something like that means a lot more to these kids. And, you know, it's just, I'm so glad to hear that, you know, you're giving back like that. That means so much. And then you get to leave and we're stuck with them for the rest of the day. But that's
right.
Okay. I teach theater, so it's all good. We just play games in here and role play, you know. But
yeah, I was going to say your students probably love being there.
Yeah. Usually it's a big empty space. We had a meeting here last night.
Okay.
I don't know why I feel the need to tell you that.
It does look like a room of chairs.
Right, dude. Yeah. It really does. The kids came in this morning. They're like, what the hell is going on? What is this, movie day? What's going on?
So when your first book, The Good Girl, was that the one that you were writing that got, I know people write books and they don't always, but what was that experience like? Because it blew up. You got nominated for all kinds of awards. Like you were an instant like airport. Like there's my book.
Mm. it was totally surreal. Honestly, you know, like I said, I loved to write for a long time before I thought about publishing a book. But it was always very private. Like I just did it for myself. I didn't think about putting my book out there. The Good Girl was the first thing that I finished and the first thing that I felt confident enough to want to try and publish. But still, you know, when it sold, I had no expectations for it. You know, I thought like family, friends would buy it, like it might do okay. And I remember very early on, my agent at the time had sent me a book. It's called What to Expect, like when you're about to publish a book, right. something like that. That's not the exact title, you know, and in it, it sort of talks about how your book's probably not going to do that well. Your publisher may not get, you know, totally behind it. And so I really kept my expectations very low. And then as it got closer and closer to publication, and I realized for one that my publisher was 110% behind this book and that early readers were really liking it, you know, and I started to realize it got a starred review from Publishers Weekly, and I realized things were really moving in the right direction. It was a shock. You know, I had such low expectations going into it. So for readers to just love it and for it to do as well as it did was so exciting.
I can't even imagine. Yeah. How old was your daughter? Was she like a toddler probably?
So she was born in 2005 and The Good Girl published in 2014. So it was actually 9 years it took me about 5 years to write it, a couple more years to find an agent. And then once I sold the book, it was still like 18 months maybe before it published.
It takes so long, doesn't it?
Long. Yeah.
Yeah. And then with your background of history, I don't know, and forgive me, but have you ever written any historical fiction?
I have not. I say a lot of times that it's on my bucket list, but but I read a lot of historical fiction, and I am in awe just of the way that these writers can completely transport you to some other time period. And you know, that I have the advantage of like, I can make the vast majority of my books up. You know, I do some research, but the majority of it is made up. And so that intimidates me to be able to do the research, to do the writing, to just make it feel completely authentic, maybe one day, but I think I would need more time.
Yeah. I mean, you can definitely do it. You can tell, you know how to tell a story. That's the biggest part about
it. That's the number one thing. I've been going around singing the title of your song because we just wrapped up You're in Town. And so I don't know if you're familiar with it. One of the songs is We're Not Sorry. And then your book is, I just started to get the music out of my head. And then I got my hands on your book. And now it's right back in. So thanks for that.
Sorry.
No, yeah, you're not sorry. She. I can definitely say she's not sorry.
That's right.
Sorry, not sorry. Do you have any interesting like writing quirks that you have to have in place when you sit down to write, or How does that work for you?
You know, I like things to be super quiet. I'm really, really easily distracted. So I do the best when everybody's out of the house and it's just quiet. I guess my one weird thing, but I think a lot of authors actually do this, is I'm an early, early morning writer. So I wake up at 5 o'clock every day. I started doing it out of necessity when my kids were really young. And after I sold The Good Girl, my second book was under contract, had a deadline, all of that. So my kids were still very young and I needed to get my writing done before they woke up, because after that, I was just on mom duty. So I did that. But even now, you know, now they're 16 and 18. So, you know, they don't need me as much as they used to, but I'm still up at 5 o'clock every day writing. I just find that it is my best time. Like the words flow at that time of day more than they do any other time of day. So that's my one quirk, I guess.
Yeah, definitely. That's interesting.
It seems to me that the most writers we talk to, that is their best time to write. I wonder if it's because your mind is just maybe it's just uncluttered with the, you know, the detritus of the day, you know, and it's free and it's clean and you can just off you go.
Right. Yeah, I think so. You know, there's not a whole lot you're going to do at 5 a.m. So, you know, I don't feel bad. And yeah, I agree. You know, you're just, like you said, your mind is pretty clear.
Yeah. And so you do your writing, then you go, do you get your run in after that, or how does, you know?
I do. Yeah. Usually I'll get my writing done in the morning, then I'll get a run in after that. That's and perfect. Then, you know, depending on if I wrote as much as I wanted to that morning, then I'll come back to it or not.
Yeah.
Do you listen to audiobooks? I like to listen to audiobooks when I run. What do you do?
I listen to music when I run. Yeah. I do love audiobooks, but not when I'm running. When I run, it's all the music. Huh.
A lot of people are like that. I would say most people are listening to music. I say the music for races. For some reason, I don't know why.
Gets you pumped up.
I guess. I don't know. All right, Mary, it is time now for our segment that we call Quick Six. These are six quick questions in which we find out just a little bit more about you. Here we go. What is the last show you watched or binged and really enjoyed?
The Tourist. Really good. I think it's on Netflix with, oh my gosh, Jamie Dornan. It's really, really, really good. A story about a guy that someone's after him. He ends up in a car accident and with amnesia. He doesn't know who he is. And there's some clues, you know, while he's trying to figure out who he is and why people are after him. Very good.
Okay. Sounds like a Mary Kubica book.
It really does. Yeah. Interesting.
What fictional world or place would you like to visit?
Oh gosh. That's a good question. Honestly, I don't know. It sounds kind of, my son and I are into the Dune movies. Oh, yeah. So let's say that.
Okay. That's good.
That's a good one.
Yeah, I haven't seen any of them.
I'm assuming you've seen the new one. This guy here I teach with, he's telling me I got to go to Colorado's largest IMAX theater, and I got to see it in the largest IMAX. Did you see it in IMAX or just regular?
I did not, no, okay. But that would be really good.
I've heard the second one is good. I saw the original a very long time ago.
Okay. Oh, my gosh. They're just incredible. I mean, and like the cinematography, everything, just amazing. Mm.
Wow.
Mm. Yeah, might have to. I probably won't see it. We probably won't see it. I'm not going to lie. How about this? Well, speaking of movies, Mary, give us one of your favorite movies of all time.
Oh, my gosh. Let's say Shawshank Redemption. That's, just so, so incredible. I just watched that not too long ago for like the third or fourth time. Right. So great.
Yeah. Such a good
one. You know, writers, we get that frequently from writers. Mm-hmm. Writers in particular, for some reason, love that movie.
Do they? I mean, it is just... I mean, it's so sad, but it's also so hopeful at the ends, but it's just so well done.
Mm-hmm. As well. Yeah. How about one of your favorite books?
I would say, I have historical fiction. Let's say The Nightingale by Kristen Hanna. That one. Oh my gosh. Have you read it?
Yes. Oh yeah. Have you read Women yet by her?
I downloaded the audiobook, but I haven't started it. I have a couple, you know, little road trips coming up next month. So I'm saving it for that.
You are in a treat.
Oh my gosh. And I'm sure that I'm going to be crying through most of it.
Yeah. It's intense. The first half is intense. Yeah. But The Nightingale's probably one of my favorites of hers.
So good. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. I know.
All right. Mary, how about this? Do you have a go-to karaoke song?
No. You've heard my daughter sing. I don't sing. Oh, you would right. not want to hear me sing. Yeah. I've been asked questions like this, like, what are you freakishly bad at? And I always say singing. No, I don't karaoke.
Is your husband, is her dad, does he sing?
He does not. No, my mom did some singing when she was younger. But other than that, I don't know, just a natural gift.
Oh, oh, so lucky. That's one thing I wish. Like, I'd like that ability. I don't know what I would do with it. I certainly wouldn't
be. What are you going to do? You can karaoke with it. That's what you're going to do.
Yeah.
With it.
No, I do too. I wish that I could sing. I mean, it's just such a beautiful skill to have, I think. And, you know, the way you can just move so many people, it's incredible.
Yeah. With just your voice. Yep. Yeah.
It is amazing.
Let's see. Last but not least, what book are you currently reading?
I'm reading Heather Gudenkauf's Everyone is Watching, which comes out, I want to say next week, like the very end of March sometime. And it's incredible. It's so good. It's kind of like a reality TV show, Big Brother type thing, where a group of people gets brought to this house. And they don't really know why they've been chosen. And then things start to kind of take a turn for the worse. And it's really good, really good. I can't wait to see where it goes from here.
She's she's great. We talked to her. Are you a fan of the reality TV? Do you watch the reality TV?
You know, I like Survivor a lot.
Yeah, we're big Survivor fans.
Yeah. I'm one episode into the new season.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm a little behind, but I like that one or The Amazing Race. Those are my two go-tos.
Us too. Yeah. We love The Amazing Race. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. And we also love your book. She's Not Sorry. Oh, sorry, Laura.
All right. No, we loved your book. Yeah. The whole family. You got the whole family reading it and talking about it. It's so good.
I love that. Well, thank you so much for reading it. I appreciate it.
Of course. Yeah. Thanks for talking with us.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Have a good rest of your day.
Thanks. You too.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
All righty. Thank you so much to Mary Kubica for hopping on. Check out that book, She's Not Sorry. And I'll tell you who also won't be sorry, you, for picking this up and reading it. Trust us on that. It's a really good one. And hope you've been enjoying our shows this week. Got another one for you coming up tomorrow, or depending when you listen to this, we're going to put out another one tomorrow, this Thursday, as we record this. Now, anyway, till next time, my name is D.A. Medicus. See ya.
Adios. What you guys think?